Okay, well, thank you very much, Mary. That was the kindest introduction I've had in a long time. Okay, well, DV asked me to meet with you today and tell you, based on my work, how much more money people can make because of it. And I have to scale back his ambitions a little bit for this talk. But what I would like to do is to bring you up to date on some of the basic research that we're doing to support increased utilization of cotton and to keep the door open. It's been open, but I want to make sure that you all realize that it is open for collaboration on where we can use some of our skills and knowledge of basic structure and relationships to work on current problems that are of practical interest. And I want to credit a few of my current collaborators in this talk. And just mention here that our structural studies include models of different cellulose molecules and crystals of those molecules, as well as some derivatives or simplified variants of cellulose chains. And we're actually doing a fair amount to try to marry theory and experiment. Although the experiments that we're doing, like X-ray crystallography at the University of New Orleans, for instance, fall into the theoretical division of the department. So some people may consider that pretty theoretical. So what we're doing with model crystals here is just to confirm the experimental structural studies that were done on ideal samples. Just to alert you to this, when someone who's really trying to get at the essence of cellulose structure wants to find a sample, they do not use cotton. I'm sorry to say. The best samples that are relevant for cotton come from a marine animal that's so simple it's not even complicated enough to be classified as a worm. And it makes a tunic of cellulose. And this cellulose is the most crystalline material that has been discovered that is composed of cellulose. And so we would like to relate those results back to cotton cellulose and make sure that everything is correctly brought back. So we want to try to understand the amorphous component of cotton fibers and what the sizes of the crystals are. Candace Hagler, who's done a lot of work on studying of biosynthesis of cotton, she's had a question, but your crystals are bigger than the ones that are biosynthesized. Well, no, wait a minute, I didn't synthesize them. So there's something wrong with the biosynthetic proposals here that we don't really understand what's going on. And we're trying to provide cellulose models for understanding enzyme action. This is, enzymes are very important, as you all know, for processing cellulose and also in the business of bioenergy, trying to break cellulose down into alcohol for inferior types of cellulose. You'd never use good cotton fibers for that. We're trying to provide models for understanding the effects of water on cotton cellulose. These are just some samples of our model crystals here. This is a model here with 9 cellulose chains. They're coming out of the screen at you. In our case, this original model here is tilted a little bit so that you can sort of see down the chains. There are 20 glucose residues in this model, and this is a reasonably good mimic of the cellulose crystals in cotton. I think the diffraction peaks come out to about the right width and so forth. And this is based strictly on the Nishiyama, Langen, and Shanzi crystal structures that were published in JAX, Journal of American Chemical Society, about 8 years ago now. If you give each of the atoms some molecular motion consistent with the room temperature, 300 Kelvin, and then freeze the frame, stop all the atoms from motion, and plot them. You see that the surfaces of the crystal are fuzzed up quite a bit. The atoms on the surface are not as regularly oriented as they are over here, based on the crystal that has an assumption of infinite periodicity. And actually, you notice the molecules here in the center don't look so fuzzed up, but part of the fuzzing up here is that this whole assembly has twisted. There's about 1 degree of twist for each of the glucose units along the chain, and so doesn't show up so much in the center, but out on the surfaces, a lot of this, the whole crystal has been twisted. And another thing we're studying here, this is, again, this original model here, and when we do a molecular dynamic study, we put them in a bath of water, a box of water, and even though we know that water doesn't penetrate into the crystals, it does stick to the surfaces, and we've pulled out two solvation shells, as the molecular dynamics people like to say. So they're essentially a 5 angstrom thick layer of water molecules here, which is about 2 water molecules. And the top doesn't look quite so clean because there are actually 2 layers of water molecules on the top and bottom here of the crystal as well. This is about 30% water for the cellulose. That's what it would look like. So that's way more water than you have it in my shirt right now at 5% in the dry winter and non-perspiring speaker, I want you to know. And if we can calculate the diffraction pattern from this is the 300 degree molecular dynamics water model without any water used in the diffraction pattern. And what I wanted to point out is basically if we could get the crystallites out of cotton cellulose and arrange them in a nicely ordered way, we could get a diffraction pattern from cotton cellulose that looks this good. And then we could proceed to work backwards and solve it to see that the atom positions that you work out are equivalent to those that were determined from this tunicate cellulose that is the ideal. There's some little artifacts of our model here. You see this small angle scattering here. This is directly related to the fact that our models have 20 glucose residues in them, and they're 110 angstroms long, and that's what the spacing between these lines here indicates. So anyway, but this is the sort of thing we can do. It's unique because we're calculating a diffraction pattern from something that isn't really a crystal because it's been fuzzed up by the molecular dynamics. We have a non-periodic array, and so Nishiyama, who's a collaborator of mine in Grenoble, France, wrote a program especially for doing this work to calculate these very nicely photorealistic diffraction patterns. We can also calculate a traditional powder pattern here, and this shows the major diffraction peak here and the two smaller diffraction peaks that almost all of you have seen before for diffraction pattern of cellulose 1. And you see that the original is in red, and if you put the two layers of water around it, it doesn't really affect the diffraction pattern that much. If you do molecular dynamics on it and make it less crystalline, it lowers the intensity of the peaks quite a bit, and it also shifts the peak a little bit because the modeling parameters aren't quite right, and it's very difficult to get these things. This is a very sensitive measurement. It's just a few tenths of an angstrom, like 3/10 of an angstrom of difference in the crystal size, in the unit cell size. So this is the sort of thing that we're fooling with right now. This is some work that was presented yesterday by some collaborators at Tulane University. And what they have done is they've taken this model of the cellulose crystal from the tunicate work and built a large surface of cellulose chains, and then they've put a droplet of water on the surface here. And this is looking down from if this is the flat surface of the crystal here, here's the drop of water on top of that surface, or like this, which is what you see in the other image here. And what they then proceeded to do was to let this go through molecular dynamics and watch how the water spreads out over the surface, and they can get the time that it takes for the water to spread out over the surface. The kinetics of movement of water through cellular structure are very interesting. They've also, if I can take a little bit more time, I'll add that they've put methyl groups on some of the or all of the and varying amounts of the cellulose chains instead of the hydroxyl groups to see how that affects the distribution of water here. And this has they're very prototypical models for some of the wicking windows fabrics that are developed with collaborators with Cotton Incorporated. And so we're trying to understand, they've got some ways that they think those treatments work to preferentially move water in one direction in the fabric, and this is a kind of a demonstration of a way to test those hypotheses. Some of the other work that we're doing involves high accuracy small molecule crystal structures. With the very best cellulose diffraction patterns, we think we can get about 3 significant figures, but the errors are rather large, even with these very good tunicate celluloses. And with the small crystals, of the shortest cellulose chain, I like to say, is cellobiose, which is just 2 glucose residues long. And some of these molecules make excellent crystals, and we can get 5 or 6 significant figures of data for the atom positions and very accurately determine things. And we're getting insight on cellulose problems from looking at molecules like methyl cellobiose. And there are, when you do a small molecule crystal structure, you get a picture of what the molecule looks like very accurately in one particular set of circumstances. But it turns out that there are many different derivatives of cellulose, of cellobiose and cellotriose and cellotetrose that are in the literature. And if you group these together, you get a little bit of an idea of what the effects of different substitutions are on the molecule. But you also say, well, these things are all turning out almost the same, and so the main thing is the backbone of the molecule, and we can use that to confirm our molecular models if we can predict what it is in general from an isolated molecule. Just one cellobiose molecule, putting it in different shapes and finding what the best shapes are. And we don't just look at a cellobiose crystal structure, then we look at all of the cellobiose type crystal structures to confirm our work. And this is one of the structures that we've done. It's got, here's a beta glucose unit here, and here's another, this is alpha glucose. So this is actually alpha cellobiose. And it was in a complex with sodium iodide and water. And so here's the water, the sodium ion, excuse me, very precisely located here. And you see, normally in cellobiose, the O3 hydroxyl hydrogen would be pointing over here towards the ring oxygen in the next ring, making a very nice hydrogen bond here. It happens almost all the time. But if you put sodium in there, then the sodium actually bonds with the lone pairs of electrons on O3 and on O5, and this bridge is twisted a little bit so that there's a pocket for this sodium to fit in there instead of the hydrogen atom that would fit in there otherwise. And we'll also get some good data on the water molecule, but it's bonded to the cellulose, cellobiose in a couple of places, but it's mostly bonded to the sodium ions. This is a very good model for soda cellulose too. It turns out that the twist between these glucose residues would lead to a 3-fold helical structure instead of the usual 2-fold helical structure of cellulose. And that's the structure that's found in Sotocelos II. So the complex formation, I think, in Sotocelos II would have the sodium atom in a very comparable location in that Sotocelos, which is an intermediate of mercerization. This is another little another crystal structure that we did. We actually were able to publish this in the Journal of the American Chemical Society because it had so many new features in it that weren't seen in one place before. And what the molecule is cellobios again, and we put cyclohexane groups. My colleague Thomas Rosenau in Vienna did this. What really happened here is he gave me a flash drive. Here are the coordinates for this crystal structure. It's already been solved. Would you write the paper for us? And it was a great honor for me to be asked to do that. And they hadn't really looked to see what they had. But anyway, there were features like you see the O6 here is bonding to O2. This is in the TG position here, which is the usual position in cellulose, but it's not seen in any of the other small molecules that are fragments of cellulose. So that's an interesting situation. And so that was one of the many new features. The two of the molecules here are pointing up. You see this O5 here is next to O1 and C1 and O1. It's on the top side here of this drawing. And here the O5 is on the bottom side. And here's another one on the bottom side. Actually, there are two molecules pointing down and one molecule pointing up. And the cyclohexanes fit here. And there's one loose one here. And there's another loose one here that aren't attached to the cellulose. They're necessary to make a crystal of this. And there were lots of interesting things about that. Another molecule that we're studying here is called trehalose. It's an insect sugar. It's got two glucose units that are hooked head to head. And the interesting thing about that for us is that it has pockets that it traps water in. And we're using a technique called atoms and molecules analysis that definitively proves that there's a hydrogen bond. You can't really know. The atoms can look like they're in about the right places, but you can't really tell if they're hydrogen bonding in a conventional analysis. But we can see the electron density has certain properties in either a quantum mechanics calculation or in the X-ray diffraction experiment, if you collect the data very accurately, to come up with what's called a bond critical point, for instance. So here's the center water molecule, oxygen atom, and the two hydrogens here and here that are the H2 of the H2O. And you see this proton is being donated to this oxygen over here in the environment. These are fragments of the trehalose molecule. In the quantum mechanics, we can't handle so many trehalose molecules all at the same time because it's a very expensive calculation. And here's another hydrogen bond being donated here to this trehalose fragment down here from the water molecule. And then this trehalose fragment up here is donating its hydrogen to the water molecule. That's a normal sort of thing. Everybody agrees that. And here's another trehalose fragment down here donating to this central water. But we also see carbon hydrogen oxygen, CHO hydrogen bonds, that are weaker than their usual OHO hydrogen bonds, but are now very well established among the people that are willing to look at the electron densities or the geometries. And so a lot of these molecules are donating CHO hydrogen bonds here as well. So I guess we've got three of those, three CHO hydrogen bonds and four OHO hydrogen bonds. And so this water molecule looks like it's very tightly held in the crystal structure. So this shows how a water molecule can interact with a carbohydrate. And it, when we look at other situations like the water on the surfaces of cellulose chains, we can look at those and see whether that's actually a reasonable model or not based on our experience with these this a little bit exotic molecule. This insect sugar is used in the laboratory for protecting proteins and keeping them from drying out for long-term storage. And it's also made by some insects that might be leaving sticky deposits on cotton fibers in the field. So it's an interesting sugar for people that are studying cotton. And we're looking at short cellulose chains besides the cellobios that I mentioned. Here we're using some advanced molecular dynamics methods in collaboration with our friend Nana from the Los Alamos National Labs in New Mexico, and we're doing quantum mechanics energy minimization studies in New Orleans, just among many things that we're doing in this line. And this shows the molecular replica exchange molecular dynamics that was done at many different temperatures. We can model it up past the decomposition temperature to see how temperature affects the range of motion. Here, the phi and the psi axes here just depict how much the glucose residues have twisted relative to each other where they're connected to the linkage oxygen. And all these dots here, of course, were from different temperatures based on their color, but the work here is half a year or something like that of cluster time on a very large supercomputer system at Los Alamos National Lab. The little contour lines are ones that from our studies at SRRC with the same software, but they didn't use this fancy replica exchange. They were done at room temperature, and they were fairly successful in predicting the properties at high temperature and with the replica exchange. And these are the crystal structures that are observed in the for cellobios type molecules. So this is the lowest energy, the dominant energy region, the blackest region from the replica exchange, which is the lowest energy region. And there's a fairly good agreement there with that. And this is our quantum mechanics map. It's very similar in shape. You see the lowest energy 1 kilocalorie contour here has a profile very similar to the 1 kilocalorie contour on the empirical force field studies. And again, the prediction of the crystal structures and so forth. These are the new ones from that dimethyl cyclohexane cellobios. Dicyclohexyl cellobioside crystal structure that I showed you. And that's the end of just a little flavor for the things that wind my watch.